Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in during the holiday season. I hope everybody's having a Merry Christmas. For me, I had a fusion dinner of Ecuadorian turkey and stuffing with Chinese hot pot. So it was a very international experience with just a small group of friends. So I hope everyone else had a great holiday. So between Christmas and New Year's, this is episode 14. It's a first part of a two-part series. I met up with my good friend John Buford, who is an inspiration for all startups in Hong Kong, a few years ago starting up Boot HK after being a founding partner of the Startups HK group. And he shares in his first part his story of the Startups HK, the Boot HK co-working space, and how he got into his newest venture with also some traction and funding. So I hope everybody enjoys. So thanks for being with us, John.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so I remember I met you a few years ago, and it was right when you were starting the Boot HK co-working space, and you were kind of visiting other companies and rounding up the troops to kind of get enough backing to start it. Maybe that'd be a good place maybe to start and introduce yourself of how you got involved with the startup community in Hong Kong.
Well, so I got started tech startups in Hong Kong after 2008. My background's originally product development and manufacturing, marketing, things like that. In 2008, the retail environment changed a lot, and I decided to try doing online startups at that point. So I started a project management planning system startup back at that point. And in 2009, a bunch of us were at a forum that was hosted by Cyberport. We decided, okay, you know, we're kind of tired of working separately, you know, and in terms of not really having any cohort to talk about what we were doing. And so at that point, we started getting together. We called it Startup Mondays. We were just, it's basically like a self-help group for startups. So we'd meet up every Monday at a coffee shop, and we'd talk about what we were up to, what problems we were having, try to help other people their problems. That ended up snowballing. And so we started out with 6 people, 8 people, and then, you know, 20 people. And at that point, we saw that there was actually, you know, there was something there that we could build around. We turned that into a 500-person meetup called Startup Saturday by August of 2010. And kind of over that same period when we were planning Startup Saturday, I saw that we needed some sort of shared space for that community in the longer term. And at the time, co-working was still kind of a relatively novel thing globally. It's something that was reasonably well-known in the U.S., but that was kind of the cusp of co-working becoming mainstream. So I came across co-working, but then also we said, oh, it would be great if we had a hackerspace in Hong Kong. But what we found out was when we kind of put together models for how to make a space of accessible but also sustainable, focusing on the co-work space first was the viable model to make it sustainable. So at Startup Saturday, I pitched Boot HK, which, you know, as basically the first co-work space in Hong Kong, was able to raise a little bit of funding to open it up, and we literally opened it for about 15,000 US all in between my funds and then funds from initial investors. So by October 2010, we had the first co-work space open. It was 1,000 square feet of space, which that sounds tiny if you're coming at it from probably a lot of other markets. But in Hong Kong, 1,000 square feet of space is actually a pretty big space. In terms of working there, we had typically about 15, 20 people actively working out the space at any given time. And then what was like the biggest thing with Boot HK, what it enabled us to do over the next 2 years while I had that original space running, was we would have the Startup Monday meetups, and sometimes we had 60 people come to these meetings. It was when you hear standing room only, like that's really what it was. And the thing was, yes, it was small, it was cramped, it was, you know, the decoration was basically whatever was there minus whatever we tore out. But at the same time, you know, there's some real energy and everything there. And it, definitely we were actively growing a community, you know, in that space. So that was really cool. And I think, yeah, at this point, there's quite a few people, you know, like you, that come back and, you know, we kind of reminisce about what things were like during that period. Because now we've gotten the community to the point that it's big enough that there's no one focal point anymore for the community. It's definitely very spread out, and there's what about 15 to 20 workspaces now. So there's, yeah, it's definitely a different thing than it was, you know, say 2 years ago in that respect. But it's definitely continuing to grow. You know, the startup scene in Hong Kong is continuing to grow. And then our next stage for me is actually we're going to be growing a hardware startup scene here. Because what I see is, you know, for Hong Kong, there's probably two really strong bits that we people, you know, definitely don't have as much advantage, which would be hardware and manufacturing, and then financial technology. Everything else, other markets probably, you know, have at least as good a foundation. But for those two things, I personally think that Hong Kong has real strength, is different than any market.
There's also a topic at the Start Me Up session last week was, they're saying hardware, logistics maybe kind of falls under hardware, and financial technology are two big industries in, that are special in the Hong Kong scene. So yeah, thanks, John. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Boot HK and the Startup Mondays. And I think I'm also a little bit reminiscing too. But it's great now. I mean, the startup community is so vast. They're announcing new ones last week, new co-working spaces, and it's definitely, they're getting niches now of different industries, and it's definitely great. And I think a lot would agree you were kind of like the founding father, one of them for sure, to get this kickstarted. So thanks for that. Maybe we can talk now about what you're working on. I think a lot of us are fans of Makeable, and maybe you could give a story how that started.
Yeah, sure. So, like I mentioned, I started Boot HK at the tail end of 2010. I kind of jokingly, although I guess it's only half jokingly, called Boot HK my rebound startup. At the project management software startup that I had started back in 2008-2009, ended up burying about mid-2010 for various reasons. Mostly just with the project management space, it takes a lot of time to sell it in and build up any sort of traction. And then at the same time, I was having serious disputes with my co-founder, and I just ended up getting burnt out. And so, yeah, Boot HK was actually kind of, like I said, a rebound startup for me that kind of gave me some space to think about what to do next. So like I said, my background was product development, marketing, and manufacturing. And so I started looking at how to revitalize the invention licensing industry, because that was kind of what I was building up a business in prior to 2008. And so I was looking at, is there any way to kind of turn that industry around in a different way to take some of the dependencies away from retail sales, so like mass retail? Because with invention licensing, the typical route was you'd come up with a concept, you'd shop it around product marketing companies, and then if you were lucky, within a year, once you had it placed, you'd start getting some revenue from it. That led to looking at crowdfunding, which, like, I actually ran a crowdfunding campaign back in 2005 for a product I developed. And you know, so before Kickstarter, before anybody really even thought about crowdfunding, I at least did a product that way. I just didn't really realize that that's what I was doing in that sense. So started looking at, okay, invention licensing, crowdfunding. We saw that Kickstarter was doing really well, but then that they had a lot of product-based projects that would fail to deliver in a reasonable time or completely fail to deliver because, you know, maybe a good designer didn't know how to do the manufacturing side of things. I kind of concepted out, you know, fairly grand scheme of crowdfunding that was connected up with the manufacturing back end that I could tap into locally. So originally Makeable was a crowdfunding website that we would then organize getting something actually manufactured in China. And then with the longer term vision, being able to figure out better ways of manufacturing that would reduce requirements for number of items that you need to produce at a time or things like that. We successfully put up the crowdfunding website in 2011. At the tail end of 2011, I was working on the Mickey Box project, which we then put up for funding originally at the beginning of 2012.
Okay.
That ended up being like a very successful campaign. It was the biggest campaign that we ran on the crowdfunding site on Makeable. It ended up getting over 100,000 U.S. in pre-orders at the time. And so at that point, we had gotten a good read of what would it be like to grow the crowdfunding site. What are the costs? Basically, to get a good idea of, are we going to get a good return from the crowdfunding site? And what we realized is that it was better for us to focus more on the other side, the manufacturing side. So at that point, we made the first decision to kind of cut off the crowdfunding site and then just focus on rapid prototyping and newer manufacturing technologies. So roll forward, roughly almost 2 years. So we're shipping the Mickey Box, which is still the world's cheapest 3D printer. Now we're looking at, okay, that's great, world's cheapest 3D printer, but what the Mickey Box did for us was a very good perspective on what the market is like for 3D printing. And what we've seen is 3D printing is pretty exciting, but it's definitely not a cure-all as far as it's not going to replace the manufacturing base. It's something that, with the right applications, it makes sense for making things, but it's not it would be something like trying to put a screw into a wall using a hammer. It probably worked, but the results are probably kind of messy. What we see is the biggest opportunity is actually addressing a growing need, which a lot of the crowdfunding companies have, is basically you don't know how many of some product you're going to need to make over an extended period of time. You don't know, say, if you run a crowdfunding campaign, you don't know how many you're going to need to make within a month after you run, you start the crowdfunding campaign, and in a month, you may have 10 orders or you may have 10,000 orders. And right now, in order to efficiently approach that, there's no really one-size-fits-all solution for being able to make those products. And so that's our next stage with Makeable, is to address that market, to develop manufacturing resources, so literal contract manufacturing resources that will start with a space in Hong Kong. So we're shooting for the middle part of 2014 to have our first manufacturing space open. And we'll be looking at, how to develop adaptive manufacturing, both technologies and systems, to really optimize, making products. So that's kind of what Makeable is doing. And kind of part of that, it would be focusing on developing a hardware startup community here as well.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think it's always key with any business, or especially startup, is finding the community around it to support it. And you're good at that too, so I'm sure it'll be successful. And it's really interesting. I know we always, at least for me, I hear always people talk about 3D printing, and it's interesting how, you're doing a really good job listening to the market.
Okay, so like angel investing and things like that.
Angel investing and maybe Hong Kong, or a process that you found or went through.
Well, kind of a leading point, I would say, if you're looking to raise investment funds for a company, always try to do it from some sort of position of strength. Even if you're starting the company, you really need to know what it is that you have that actually has value, and try to leverage whatever value you have. But at the same time, you have to be very honest about that value, because if you go up to an investor with just an idea and you say, my company is worth $10 million US, they'll just think that you basically don't have any clue what you're talking about. So I think for me, anytime that I've gone out and done fundraising, it's always, when I've been successful with it, it's always been leveraging off of traction or anything. And it's not saying that we weren't in a position where we needed to get the investment in order to keep the company going, if there was a specific need. But at the same time, I always tried to find what it was that I had a value that nobody else did, and used that as kind of the focal point for raising the fund. So that being said, so when we started Makeable, I first approached an angel investor that I'd been talking with about various things for pretty much typically from the first Startup Saturday that we did, and you know I kept up a dialogue with him. And so basically the thing was, I got his buy-in as far. He wanted to invest in Makeable before we launched our first product, but then you know, the money never followed. So and I think that's one thing that you'll find with a lot of investors is you'll get a, yes, I really do like this idea, but then a lot of times they need a little bit of a nudge of some sort to get them to actually commit the funds, like literally sign a check or make a transfer. And there's a big difference between having the intent on investment and having the investment in hand. And a lot of people probably, especially the first time around, they think once they kind of get a conceptual deal on the table that everything's going to be fine. Until you have the cash in hand, you know, you have to keep going as if you don't have the cash in hand. So what I got to, basically, in order to seed the company, I did a project. It was actually two separate mobile phone adapters for Android. Very niche product. One adapted a headphone and made a hands-free headset. What I found was the Android robot itself was Creative Commons attribution license, which means that I could make products using the Android robot, and all I had to do was to effectively put thank you Google on the back, and then everything's fine. So I'd gotten this investor lined up for this, the first seed investment, and it was like, okay, you know, give me the check. And, you know, that just kind of kept on going and going. And I was like, okay, fine, I'm just going to go out and make money in the meantime. And so I posted up these designs for this mobile phone adapter, submitted it to Engadget, got 40,000 hits in one day, and ended up making $10,000 of sales within a week. At that point, I went back to the seed investor and was able to negotiate better terms than we were initially talking. And I was able to actually get the cash coming in the door. So that was how I, you know, the first seed investment in the Makeable went. The next couple were people that were interested. They're kind of like effectively co-founders that also invested in the company. So that was a little bit different proposition. We did another round for basically, again, small seed investors that came in, and they were more arm's length investors. So they weren't actively, they haven't been actively involved in the business. They're kind of at the periphery. That all came from basically, like up until that point, it's all just within my network of people that I know, which in Hong Kong, people are pretty easy to network in that sense. So I think if somebody now were trying to raise funds, one, it would be a lot easier than it was for me 2 years ago. There's a lot more active investors and, you know, even say like funding platforms and other things that are available that you just didn't have that long, you know, that, you know, 2 to 3 years ago, you just didn't have that accessible. So I think, you know, nowadays, probably easier to meet up with investors. It's probably easier to find investors that will commit to seed round funding in Hong Kong. I think we're starting to see Series A, but and that's actually kind of our next stage is to look at that. And I think that's going to be the question, because for Series A, you really need to have companies that are appropriate for that level of funding. And I think that might be where it's a little bit more difficult to find in Hong Kong. So I don't know that there's necessarily a Series A crunch in Hong Kong, because there's not enough demand here, a legitimate demand here for it yet.
Got it. That's really interesting, John. So maybe an early stage tech startup in Hong Kong or coming to Hong Kong or in Asia, what would you kind of, you probably talked to a lot of them already, but what's your maybe common advice for them to get started or, you know, get going?
Yeah, well, so there's a few different things. One, it's definitely easy enough to reach out to people within the startup community here, even if you're abroad. So for the most part, if people have time, they will at least attempt to, you know, try to clue people in from overseas if somebody expressed interest. One government-connected body called InvestHK, and they actually, they have a mandate in order to help companies come and set up in Hong Kong. So they actually, even for small startups, you know, one-person startups, whatever, that's their whole role, is to help make that transition easy. And they're becoming much more startup aware and friendly, I would say. Yeah, so once you get here, there's kind of two different things that people tend to do. One, people just kind of pop over here and kind of do a scouting mission, so to speak, to try to determine if it's a good fit. Some people, I think, literally, they just hop on a plane with, you know, all the worldly possessions that they want to bring in, and they just go ahead and take the plunge before doing any pre-arrangements. So I think both work. But look, either way, Hong Kong especially is quite accessible. If you come here, so reaching out to people before you get here, yeah, you'll get some people that will follow up with you. If you're here, though, it's stupidly easy to connect with people, and what you'll find is once you connect with one or two people, they'll connect you with 10 other people until you find the right fit, or mentors or partners or whatever it is. So networking in Hong Kong is kind of unreal, but it's also, like, because of the density. So, like, yesterday I was at a meeting at a coffee shop where, you know, I saw a handful of other people that I knew, and then I made an introduction from those guys to the guy I was meeting with. So then he immediately had in a broader network in just within a 1 or 2 hour period. So that's pretty common here. As far as investment pieces go, as long as you have a reasonable amount of cash that you can show, the Hong Kong government's pretty good about granting at least the first year investment visa. After the first year, you do have to show that you're hiring other things. But before that, yeah, it's as long as you are not going to be on the street, you know, begging, as long as you can make the case that you're not going to be a liability in that kind of sense. They're pretty flexible in terms of, as long as you've got a reasonable, just a plan with enough resources, it's pretty straightforward, I would say. Everything else, like setting up a company here, you know, like getting a flat, whatever, it's definitely not like, say, mainland China, where, yeah, there's not that many hoops to go through. You can start a company with overseas passport. You can rent a flat with an overseas passport. You don't need a local ID in order to kind of get things rolling. You can do it as a foreign person. So it's actually very straightforward here in that sense.
Great. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's definitely, I think it's also maybe a British influence that's helped it make it very transparent. And okay, so thanks so much, John. And then for contacting you or reaching out, probably Twitter, or how would you, you know, how do you want people to maybe follow up if there's any questions?
Probably Twitter. Twitter's probably the easiest. You can also, through our website, the customer support, Makeable. So it's customer_support@makeable.com. Other than that, yeah, I like kind of generally around various social media channels, but probably Twitter or directly through that email is the easiest.
Okay. Thanks, John. And yeah, we'll link this all up on the show notes. So thanks so much.
Yeah, no worries. It was good talking with you.
Okay. All right. And then that's a wrap. Okay. Thanks for that, John. And this is the first part of the two-part series, as I mentioned at the beginning. So the next week's episode is going to be the second series, and it's going to be John talking about the three different ways startups can raise money, and also some differences of a Hong Kong or Asia-based startup versus a US-based startup raising funds. So I hope you guys enjoy that one as well. Okay, and a quick word from one of our listeners, Chris Gormley, and he sent me a message on WeChat, Digging the Draper podcast. So, you know, I'm glad you're listening and giving me feedback. Everybody else, anybody has some feedback for me, I really appreciate it. Really helps me, inspire me for the next upcoming episodes. I have a whole bunch of content, some already recorded and some in the works for the new year. So I'm really excited going into 2014, everybody. And thanks for listening.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.